You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be running out of.
Come over here, kid. Wait, sir. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil, and you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Mastitos,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. How are you doing this evening? Certainly turned out to be a pretty weekend, didn't it? I went to the farmer's market in Santa Rosa yesterday morning, and I know the night before I was like, I'm going, it doesn't matter how hard it's raining, and it was clear and just beautiful. A little cold, but you know, that's okay. And the ground just looks so happy after soaking up all that wonderful rain. And we might be getting a little bit more tomorrow. And speaking of the farmer's market, was it just last Sunday that we did the show? It was. It seems so long ago. But we had that show with a number of people, including an interview with Bob Kennard, one of the original founders of the Santa Rosa Farmer's Market. And then just a few days after the show, Renee Kiff, who was one of our guests, ever articulate and gracious, Renee, had a guest editorial in the Press Democrat. If you haven't had a chance to see that yet, you might want to take a look. It's a nice companion to what she had to say on the show last week, and I was very happy to see that. So thank you, Renee. Really good to read. Tonight we have one guest instead of a full house, but it's going to be a full hour, believe me. We have Sam Moganum, who has written a really wonderful book, Buy Right Markets, Eat Good Food. He is also, he has that market, Buy Right Market, in San Francisco. I believe you're second generation to have that market, yes. And so we're going to, not we, Jim is going to, Sam is going to lead you through the supermarket. And this is very timely for me because I have never been more lost in markets than I have been this year. I grew up at Traversos, the beloved Traversos market. I augmented with major supermarkets. And I used to be so, I'll just confess, used to be so totally agoraphobic before I found Traversos. When I was really young, I walked out of grocery stores leaving baskets with food, with things in them in the aisle. I would just get overwhelmed and agoraphobic and panic, and I'd walk out. And Traversos was reasonably sized, but they were also so gracious that shopping wasn't a chore. It was like, oh, I get to see Rico and Louie and soon George and Bill and everyone who worked there. And I looked forward to going. And they closed the end of November. And I bought so much. And so between the farmer's market and what I had bought at the end of Traversos, I didn't really have to do a major shopping until probably January. And I went to Oliver's. And I was so sad. I cried. I was looking for certain things and I didn't know where to find them. And I was ashamed because this is what I do for a living. And I noticed tears were running down my cheeks and I just missed Traverso so much. And somebody came in and she didn't look at me like I was crazy. She says, you look like you might need some help. I said, oh, yes. And finally, he just said, you know, I'm a refugee from Traversos, and I do need help. And, you know, she got me to where I needed to go, and I've been back two or three times, and I found the staff there really helpful. So this book, Eat Good Food, takes you through the market in that same gentle, gracious, friendly way, only in writing and now on Mouthful. Here as well. So welcome. That was a long introduction.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
Sure, but it is really timely for me. And your book just came out in the fall, right?
It did, yeah, just in October. It's only been out for 5 months.
Uh-huh. How's it doing?
It's doing great. You know, we're already in our third printing.
Really?
Yeah.
And it is 10 speed. I thought it was 10 speed.
Yeah.
Is it selling locally or is it selling nationwide?
It's selling nationwide.
That's great.
Because
that's one thing
exciting.
I wondered. Yeah. Because yeah. Thinking, no, I look at it and I think, this is a book you could use anywhere, but I was wondering if people were going to respond to it as regional. So that's great.
Yeah, yeah. We worked really hard to make sure that it was pertinent information no matter where you shopped, no matter what part of the country you were in.
Cool. Tell me about the market and your history with it. Did you grow up in it?
I did, yeah. You know, the market's been in my family almost 50 years now. Next year it'll be our 50th year. I actually started working there in 1974 as a six-year-old kid, and I spent 11 years of my life working there. And by the time I got out of high school, I wanted nothing to do with it.
Sure.
And so I got into the restaurant business and fell in love with food. I fell in love with cooking.
Where did you work in restaurants?
Yeah, I ended up spending 2 years going to City College of San Francisco. And during that period, I worked at a restaurant called Kimball's, mm-hmm. Down where Jardiniere is now in the mm-hmm. Civic Center, right by the theater district. I also worked at a pretty cool diner called 19th Avenue Diner, and another hip restaurant south of the market called Taxi, before moving to Switzerland and cooking there for a year at mm-hmm. a 2-star Michelin restaurant. And then I came back and got a taste of retail. I spent a full 2 years working at the Rockridge Market Hall, working for the pasta
Maybe
shop.
Maybe that's why you look familiar, because, you know, I have spent a lot of time there.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, you know, was, you know, really one of the most inspiring jobs I've ever had. It's, mm-hmm. I still think the Market Hall is one of the most special places.
It's a great place.
Yeah. And I met my wife there, so it's very dear to me.
Uh-huh.
So I spent 2 years there before, you know, leaving, and at the age of 23, I opened up my own restaurant. So I opened a place with my younger brother and sister. We were kids, you know. My brother was 21 and my sister was 18. And we had a restaurant called Rendezvous Du Monde for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during that period of time that I just learned so much about people and about business and about how fun and important it is to feed people well.
Yeah.
You know, and I took those same principles that I learned in the restaurant business and applied them to a grocery store.
Uh-huh. And where is the store located? Let's tell people that.
It's in the Mission District. It's right by Dolores Park in San Francisco. It's tiny. It's 2,500 square feet, middle of the block, no parking. It's just a long, narrow space.
Mm-hmm.
But it's packed, busy, packed mm-hmm. with a lot of great food. It's got, you know, anything, almost everything you want. You know, and having been a cook, I wanted it to be a cook store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I wanted it to be a place where, you know, if you picked up a cookbook or cooking magazine or saw a food show that you could come to buy right and actually get the ingredients that you needed to execute that recipe.
Do you have Ben Yule's vinegar?
We do. It's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one thing or one of the things I have not been able to find since Traverso's closed.
Yeah.
It's the best. I think it's the best vinegar in the world.
I agree with you.
And
it's at the top of my list.
Yeah, I have like one teaspoon left in the bottle. So that's good. I guess I'm coming to San Francisco because I need some.
Should have brought you a bottle.
Who are your customers?
God, our customers come from everywhere. It's amazing. You know, they're predominantly local folks because mm-hmm. we don't have parking.
Neighborhood?
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
totally.
So people who can walk there.
That's right. And many of our customers, our guests, shop with us, you know, every day. And because, we don't have parking, people come and buy what they need for the day or for 2 days. And,
uh-huh.
and so we have a lot of regulars and a lot of people we get to see over and over again. I love it. You know, it's kind of like Cheers. Feels good in there.
Uh-huh. How much time do you spend there?
A decent amount. You know, I'm there 60-ish hours a week.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that feels fairly balanced some right now. You know, there were definitely days when I was putting in weeks that I was putting a lot more time in.
Yeah, but 60 seems reasonable to me. That doesn't seem excessive.
No, it's good.
Yeah.
I love it, though.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel like I'm going to work. You know, I've got a great crew, and we're always around inspiring food. Mm-hmm. You know, and it makes me happy.
Yeah. One thing I'm really curious about, so you started working there when you were really little.
Yeah.
Talk about how it's changed.
Yeah, the neighborhood. You know, the neighborhood was very different when I was a kid. You know, the Dolores Park, which is half a block away, you know, kind of was a rough park. You know, now it's kind of the center of the community, and it's a place of celebration. You know, on a given sunny day weekend, it's packed. There'll be like 10,000 people crammed into that mm-hmm. park, hanging out and having picnics, and back then it was, you know, where you went to score, you know, your dope.
Yeah.
You know, and if you, unless you had a posse of people to protect you, you didn't enter the park.
And so did that atmosphere spill off into that neighborhood?
It did.
Yeah, I did. You know, that's a neighborhood I didn't spend time in.
Yeah. I mean, I got mugged a couple of times on my
really?
Way to work. Oh, yeah. You know, we got held up fairly regularly. I had a gun put to
at
my head
store.
When I was a kid. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was a regular occurrence. It was a different world. You
yeah.
know, it was the mission. It was, you know, it was the real mission. And it was in like that period of 96, 97 that it really began to change. There was a turf war that happened in the park, and a bunch of stray bullets hit the houses along Dolores Street, and a bunch of people moved, and the folks that stayed and the new folks that moved in really put a lot of pressure on the police to camp out and to clean it up. And through late 96 and 97, the park kind of got cleaned up. And, you know, we had taken over the market and started working on it in late 97, so our timing was just right.
What do you mean you'd taken over?
Yeah, the market actually had gotten out of the family for 9 years. So my father and uncle retired in 89 right after the quake.
Okay.
And they had sold the business, but they had retained the property. They had bought the building back in the 60s as uh-huh. well. And so for 9 years, it wasn't in our family. And so my brother and I were able to get it back in late 97.
Oh, okay. So there was a gap there.
There was a small gap.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you remodel. You make a lot of changes.
Yeah, we gutted it.
Gutted it.
We
okay.
basically started from scratch. The only things that we retained really were the facade, the original sign, and the light fixtures. And you know, we had to put new plumbing, new electrical. We put a full kitchen in, and really started from scratch, you know. And since then, I've changed it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of it's almost like a canvas. You know, we keep playing with it,
uh-huh.
and keep adding layers to it,
uh-huh.
and pulling things out.
Okay, well, we're going to take a little musical break and then come back. And I wanted to talk about how you've organized the book, because I think it's really interesting.
Special offer, county personality. I wasn't born so much as I fell out. Nobody seemed to notice me. We had a hedge back home in the suburb, over which I never could see. I heard the people who live on the ceiling scream and fight with scarily. Hearing that noise was my first ever feeling. That's how it's been around me. I'm lost in the supermarket. I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for a special offer, a guaranteed personality. I'm all tuned in. I see all the programs. I save coupons for packets of tea. I've got my giant hit discotheque album. I empty a bottle. I feel a bit free. Kids in halls and the pipes in the walls, making noises for company. Long distance callers make long distance calls, and the silence makes me lonely. I'm lost in the supermarket. I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for the special offer, a guaranteed personality. It's not here.
lost in the supermarket. I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for the special offer. Guaranteed personality. I'm now lost in the supermarket. I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for a special offer. Guaranteed personality. I'm all lost.
If you're lost in the supermarket, don't fear. Sam is here to help. How should you shop? This book begins with grocery. Well, actually, there's another chapter before that. But when you get into the store, that first chapter is about creating community. But then you get into the store and you talk about grocery. You go to the deli.
Right.
So how should you shop?
I mean, you know, we started with the grocery because I feel really strongly that if you're going to be a good cook and if you're going to be able to shop seasonally and if you're going to be able to cook with spontaneity, if you're at the farmer's market, you need to have a decent pantry.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, you need to have a good bottle of olive oil. You need to have some good acids, you know, Bagnuolo vinegar or white wine vinegar, red wine vinegar, whatever they may be. Good pasta, some cans of tuna, another fish, anchovies, you know, to me are indispensable.
You have to have anchovies.
Yeah,
I think you have to have a couple kinds.
Anchovies,
yeah, you have to have at least two kinds of anchovies. You have to have, I'll see if you agree with me, you have to have brined green peppercorns.
Yeah.
It's another thing. Oliver's had never heard of them.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Or, they, or the people I talk to, they're, oh, no, no.
That surprises me.
Yeah.
Huh. Capers are another one.
Yeah, capers.
Salt. I mean, you just need to have these things around, right? And then if you've got these foundational ingredients, then it's easy to go to the market and pick up a head of cauliflower, and you can make a dish. I mean, just like that. Boom. Mm-hmm. I mean, all you gotta do is boil some pasta, roast the cauliflower, saute some garlic and add your capers and olive oil and then boom. Your dinner is done. I mean, it makes it faster and easier instead of having to buy everything like from scratch.
You know, one of the things that I think is so good about your book and about the timing is that we really have a generation or two of people who've been raised by parents who don't cook much, who don't have a pantry. And so if no one teaches you how to put together a pantry, if you didn't live like crawling up on the counter and looking at your grandma's pantry or something, how do you know? So I think this really is addressing that hole that's been, you know, that we have.
Right. I mean, the other component of it is the fact that cooking is gotten so popular. Cooking shows are all over the place in magazines and cookbooks. And nobody's really talking about the basis for how to be a great cook, which is to shop for great ingredients. And you have to know how to buy great ingredients if you're going to be able to cook them well. And so, you know, that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to teach people, you know, so that when they're in front of the butcher counter, they could have an intelligent conversation with their butcher and buy the right cut of meat that's going to make them happy.
Cool. What do you tell people about salt?
What do I tell people about salt? You know, I have two to three salts that I keep. Diamond Crystal Kosher is like my favorite. I
mean,
I use my
default salt.
It's my default for everything, you know. Yeah. But I do like to keep a flaky salt, like a Malden salt.
Malden salt is my
And then I also love like sel gris, you know, the gray salt from you know the Normandy coast of France. It's more minerally. It's really flavorful. It's got like, you know, little bits of seaweed, and I love using it in you know fish braises and you know sprinkled on meat. It just it has a little bit more depth. But typically, you know, diamond crystals.
Diamond crystal, go-to, yeah.
You know, it's cheap and you can use it, you know,
it
easily.
It fits between your fingers perfectly.
Yeah, that's right.
Brings flavors to your palate really fast. Yeah, it's my default salt.
The other thing that I often tell people about salt is, you know, you should always have a ramekin of salt. You should use your hands to pick it up, feel it, pinch it in, and always taste. And, you know, you know, I think people are always afraid of oversalting. You know, it's interesting. You know, the two components that I feel that cooks really, you know, need a lot of training on utilizing better are salt and acid. And I always feel that lemon, you know, in a dish to finish a dish brightens it up. And then, you know, making sure that you've got the right amount of salt makes it taste right.
Do you recommend that people salt and layer in stages as they're cooking to build it in?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and you know, like a chicken, you know, if you have time to salt the day before, it's even better. You know, it just gets through. Or a large cut of meat, if you're going to roast a big pork shoulder. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you salt it the day before, it's just going to have that much more flavor.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading some health food book or article just to see what was being said. And it was, well, one of the best ways to cut down on salt is to never use salt as you're cooking. It's like, oh no, just never use it. Add a little bit at the end and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
And it made me sad.
I think it's all the salt and all the highly processed foods that we're eating that's really been the issue. It's not the food that we cook. If we cook more, you know, we're not going to consume as much salt as we could.
Now, I just opened the book to a recipe, and I should say not only is this book a guide through the grocery store, it is punctuated, garnished with recipes.
Yeah, there's almost 100 recipes throughout the book.
The recipe that I just turned to, and I've not read the book page for page, but I've spent a lot of time with it, and I love it, but I had missed this one. BLTNE with harissa mayo. And I want one right now. So the E stands for eggs.
Am I guessing?
Right. Okay. And I was just working on a recipe for harissa, and harissa is so good stirred into mayonnaise. Would you talk about the sandwich?
Yeah. It's a sandwich that should be eaten in the summer when tomatoes are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a killer BLT. And if you're using, you know, great bacon, you know, especially if you get bacon from you know, the Black Pig bacon up in Healdsburg from Dusky, and good bread, good greens, a good slice of tomato, and then a perfectly poached or fried egg on top, and then sandwich that thing together. And if you got to leave the yolk nice and wet so that it just breaks and dresses everything as you eat it.
It's a beautiful,
it's incredible.
Beautiful photograph with the yolk just oozing down on top of the bacon and tomato.
And the harissa mayo just kind of gives it that bit of heat that makes the whole thing kind of shine. You know, it's cool.
Now, do you recommend people buy harissa paste or recommend that they make it themselves?
I mean, if they've got the time to make it, it would be awesome.
But you found a good brand of harissa paste.
There's a brand from Moulin Majoub from Tunisia that's killer. That's the one that I prefer.
Is it the one in a tube?
No, it's in a jar.
Oh, it's in a jar.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. The tube's good, but this to me is more authentic. It's a little coarser, deeper flavor.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, first you stock your pantry, and then you just keep your eye on it, and, you know, you replace things now and then. Next, you send people to the deli, the most dangerous part of the market.
Yeah, we send them to the deli because I also think that the deli can be a kind of a foundation for people who are in a hurry. So if, you know, you want to make dinner quickly and you want to get a protein in and don't want to spend the time cooking it, you can pick up a chicken breast and then get your salad greens and then have, you know, just a grilled chicken breast salad. And it's, you know, it's quick and simple. So we try to, you know, tell people how to utilize the deli for components for making a meal. Also talk to people about the various meats that you can buy from the deli, the sliced cured meats and how wonderful they are.
Mm-hmm. And what about slicing? That is slicing is not the simplest thing in the world. There is an art, isn't there, to slicing the cured meats, the Italian cured meats and Spanish cured meats.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something, as Traversos was winding down, that was something that came up again and again in conversation from people who, I met one woman from Italy. She was here. She came to Sonoma County every summer. She was 85.
Mm.
And she'd been shopping at Traversos since she was a little girl. And she says, no one knows how to slice, like, you know, prosciutto, whatever. And those thin slices laid perfectly with the papers between them. Is that?
It's the way to do it. It's the only way to do it, you know. And you want it to be, you want it to be paper thin.
Mm-hmm.
You want it so that it melts on your tongue when you put it in your mouth, you know. And it's amazing, you know. And to me, you know, that's the reverence and the respect that, you know, old world cultures have for meat, is they don't need much of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, a couple sizes of prosciutto, which might be less than an ounce if sliced properly, are enough. You know,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we're typically, you know, here you order a you know, a cured meat sandwich, and there'll be like a third of a pound of meat on it, and then you lose it because there's just too much of it.
Yeah,
you know, and it isn't sliced thin. You know, it's sliced a little bit too thick.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate. Do you have any advice for people if they go to a deli counter somewhere and they're not getting it sliced properly? Is there any good, polite way to try to get what you want?
I mean, I think that anybody who's ordering sliced meat should ask for a taste of the meat that they're going to get before they get it, right?
Okay.
And then, so whoever's the server is going to give them a slice, and if the slice isn't the right thickness at that point, it's your opportunity to start that conversation. Say, you know what, I'd like this to be half as thick. I mean, I'd like it to be paper thin. And then you engage in a conversation, and that server should be delighted to mm-hmm. give you what you want, because they, you know, anybody in business's goal should be to send you home happy.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, by letting you taste it, you know what you're getting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I want to jump ahead, and I'm not sure exactly where it is in the book, but let's talk about produce.
Mm-hmm.
And how you deal it by right with produce. A lot of people talk about produce being a lost leader in supermarkets. You get them in, you sell them cheap produce,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then they buy more expensive things. Is that apocryphal? Is that actually how supermarkets function?
You know, whether they function that way or not, I'm not sure.
Okay.
You know, I'm based on the pricing that I see, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I mean, they might have loss leader items, key items
uh-huh.
that are priced at cost or below cost to attract people into the department. But, you know, if you're going into a typical supermarket, you're paying. And oftentimes you're paying more money than you should be paying for conventional produce,
mm-hmm.
In my opinion. You can get better produce at the farmer's market for cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be fresher and tastier. You know, I think if you shop seasonally, and if you're shopping for produce that's grown locally, and it might not necessarily need to be within 100 miles, but even if it's within a couple, 200-300 miles,
mm-hmm.
it's still going to be better and less expensive.
Mm-hmm. So how do you stock your produce section? Do you focus on seasons?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we celebrate the seasons,
uh-huh.
you know, and that's like one of the things that I love about the produce department at BuyRight. And it's the first thing you see when you walk in, and every day is different. The display is changed because every day something new comes in. And that, to me, is like one of the most exciting things. You know, right now, we've got one side of our fruit table, you know, the entire side is all citrus. And it's just like all these shades of orange and yellows and, you know, reddish tints in this beautiful fruit that, you know, we want to celebrate. You know,
in fact, I think you brought something. Tell me what it is that you brought.
I brought a couple of different tangerines. You know, that right now are just tasting out of this world. I brought some gold nuggets, and I brought some pixie tangerines. And you know, the pixies are from Ojai, and the gold nuggets are from a little bit further south near San Diego. But they're both from, you know, really great growers and. You know, both seedless, both like amazing fruit for kids. You know, kids, like, once they taste them, like, just want more. You know,
mm-hmm.
that flavor, that tangerine lifesaver that you remember as a child,
uh-huh.
when you get it when you eat these things, you know.
You want
to taste one?
Sure. You bet. Now, keeping a market stocked every day is a big job.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of work.
How how do you find something like these tangerines? How do you source ingredients without, you know?
I mean, our produce department alone has two buyers plus plus another a staff of another dozen. And so, you know, the entire market has over 110 people now working.
Wow.
Working there. And so it's
thank you.
It takes an army of folks to to keep it stocked and to keep all the products sourced. You know, we
that is so good.
We have almost a dozen, or it is a dozen buyers that actually procure all the products for the store. So
they are on the phone, constantly reaching out.
Yeah, they're on the phone. They're out on the streets looking. They're at the farmers markets. They're going to trade shows.
Okay.
I mean, we're utilizing every resource that we possibly can. You know, talking to other buyers in other parts of the country, other parts of the city, other parts of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to figure out who's got what.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
One of the funnest parts, because then you get to meet really cool people who are really passionate about what they do.
Yeah, and see really interesting things being done.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was which tangerine was that one?
That was the Gold Nugget. You want to taste
that? Oh, it's really, really good. It's very delicate.
Yeah, this one's going to have a little more acid.
Really, yeah, the acid is there, but it's very soft.
Yeah, it's balanced.
Yeah, really very pretty. You know what? Well, we peel this tangerine, I think we're going to take another little musical break here on Mouthful.
Well, I walked past just yesterday, and I couldn't bear that new mall no more. I can't expect you all to see it my way, but you may not know what was there before, and I want them to put back my old corner store. Well, I walked past and I felt this hurt that would not go home. I can't expect that you're gonna see it my way, but you may not know the trees I've known, and I want them to put back my old corner store. I know it costs more money to shop there, but this was love, this was love. I know you had to pay more money, I'll pay money, I'll pay more. I don't care what the mall has got, I want back that corner store. And what did I feel when I walked by slow? Sorrow, sorrow all around. Why I would feel sorrow I now know. I smelled a ghost smell from the ground, that old wooden smell from the old corner store. Bomb an imminent way, oh, bomb an imminent way, oh, Webbo. I walked past one final time, and I wished the worst on the place I shop. Now I can't expect everyone to feel like I'm, but I spot a trend that has got to stop. And I want them to put back that old corner store. Bom-a-nim-a-nim-a-nim-a-way-o, bom-a-nim-a-nim-a-way-o-webo, bom-a-nim-a-nim-a-no, corner store, corner store.
So one thing I'm curious about is your customers. How you've been at the helm now, did you say 86, 89? No.
We 14 years.
14 years,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. 98.
Okay, so do you have customers coming in asking for tomatoes in January?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you still, okay.
We sell them.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you do take care of the you'll take care of those customers.
We have to. It's still a grocery store.
Right, okay.
You know, I mean, It's, you know, it's definitely a discussion that we have every year.
Yeah.
And we've made some, you know, I shouldn't say some, many steps to eliminate some of that seasonal or not seasonal product from the store. But tomatoes is one of them that we just haven't been able to. You know, people want them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they do.
You know.
They want apricots in February.
And well, yeah, that we won't do.
Cool.
You know, we don't do the grapes from, you know, the southern. We won't do fruit from southern
hemisphere. Okay, so you
like
don't
that,
do Chilean.
Fruit, no. No, but, you know, we still buy bananas, you know. And they're fair trade bananas. They're great.
Mm-hmm.
But still, yeah, they're not coming from here.
Yeah, pineapple.
Right.
I love pineapple. I don't go to Hawaii that often. What's a girl to do?
Yeah.
What about meat? We're hearing so much in the news about meat lately. So what do you think about sourcing meat?
You know, to me, transparency really is the most important thing with meat. And trace, being able to trace it back all the way to the source is the most important thing. And all our meat's coming from, you know, ranches that we know. We're not buying from any sort of cooperatives or from packers. You know, like most of the meat that's sold in this country is really, you know, handled by four large companies, you know, and it's, you know, grown on farms and then sent to these packing houses that process it all and distribute it under the label, and it, you know, could be coming from anywhere.
Yeah.
And you've got no clue.
Yeah, it's like people who go and buy 10-pound boxes of hamburger patties from, I don't know, Costco or something.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
I mean, if you take a look at, like, the, you know, in meat, you know, fortunately has to be labeled with the country of origin, and a lot of ground beef will be from 2-3 countries.
Oh, really?
4 or 5 countries. Yeah, you'll see. You have to look for it, but, you know, I've seen packages.
But that's
where,
meat when it comes into the market.
Yeah, it's not being, if it's being ground at the market, you're in much better shape, and you should definitely buy ground meat. I mean, that's being ground fresh every day.
Right.
But if you're buying, you know, frozen ground beef or frozen ground, you know, burgers, the chances are that it's not coming from the U.S. and it's probably got a few from cows that's coming, you know, millions of cows probably.
Right.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah. So are you, who are you getting your meats from?
You know, we work with Marin Sun Farms.
Oh, we know
and
that.
And we work with Five Dot Ranch up in the, up in the Sierras, you know, there are our main two beef suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Nyman does some great seasonal beef in the summertime.
Bill's doing?
Yeah, Bill is.
He's doing it again.
Some incredible beef. You know, last summer was the second year that he ran his cattle, and they're amazing.
He was doing a few years ago. He was doing goat.
He's still doing a little bit of goat, and he's doing the heritage turkeys.
Oh right,
which we use for our turkeys in the for the holidays.
Now, is he doing it under his name or a brand name?
BN Ranch. BN Ranch for Bill Nyman.
Oh, so BN Ranch. Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
so
great.
The turkeys under his name, the goats, and the beef.
Okay, yeah. He was on the show not long before he sold.
Oh, he was. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so it's been a while since I talked to him. Yeah,
he's inspiring.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear he's doing more. What about poultry? What are you doing other than turkey?
Yeah, so, you know, for ducks, we're using, you know, the Liberty Ducks from Jim Reichardt, which are up here.
Friend of Mouthful, you bet.
He's an awesome guy.
Yeah.
And we're using Mary's chickens right now.
Is that down in the Fresno area?
Exactly.
She does the air dried, right?
All air chilled.
Air chilled.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Which is great. So the birds aren't going through that communal chlorinated bath to get cooled down.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, they're not as waterlogged. They're cleaner, drier, safer, tastier as a result.
Uh-huh. Are you seeing any heritage chicken available? One of the things we're hearing it, a national discussion, and I forget the guy's name who heard on NPR not that long ago, talking about the Cornish cross, that chicken, and how some small farms, I know we have one here in Petaluma, I think it's Petaluma Pepper Road Farm or Pepper Road Poultry, I think it is. They're growing two different breeds of heritage birds that don't have the same, I guess you'd say, skeletal problems that Cornish cross have. Are you seeing much of that available?
Not on a large scale.
Yeah,
I mean, it's definitely something that we've been trying to source, you know, Bill, you know, Nyman and us have been talking about doing a heritage bird mm-hmm. on a larger scale. You know, not a massive scale, but on a large enough scale that we could have a supply.
Uh-huh, that would be great.
Yeah, because the typical birds, you know, raise 6 to 8 weeks. Yeah. You know, it's growing quick, and it's you know, skeletally struggling.
Yeah, they can't walk after a while. They get splayed raised. I was talking to one farmer here in Victorian Farmstead.
Yeah, yeah. He does a great job.
Yeah, and he's raising birds, but what he does is, even though they're genetically programmed to grow really fast, he doesn't make food as readily available. Mm-hmm. He only feeds them once a day, so they grow more slowly. And he hasn't had that problem with his legs playing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So how old are they when he's harvesting them?
God, I don't remember.
8 to 10 weeks, probably.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so, but I don't want to say that mm-hmm. for sure. But mm-hmm. I think that's what it is.
Mm, cool.
So, but yeah, he invited me over to see the operation at some mm-hmm. point because he says, yeah, you'll see, they can run around.
Yeah, yeah. We're definitely seeing a lot more heritage breed pigs.
Yeah,
and
sure.
The access to that's been amazing. Uh-huh. A lot of great local ranches doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really exciting. I had a dinner with a mule foot. It was in every course had, it was one pig.
Hmm.
And every course featured some of this.
Just one part.
Mm-hmm. And it was really quite amazing.
That's a lot of pig.
It's a lot of pig. Well, it was about, I forget how many people. I was up at Rustic. At the Francis Coppola Winery, mm-hmm. and they had the woman who'd raised the pig there, and she was talking about the mule foot, mm-hmm. and it has really interesting fat.
Interesting in a flavorful way, good
yes.
way, yeah, like a
yeah.
thick,
mm-hmm. and the chef made a porchetta,
beautiful,
and the
lots
best
of fennel.
Is there a lot of fennel? Not a huge amount.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so enamored of the pork, I couldn't even tell you what else was in it. But it was the most tender, succulent pork fat I've ever tasted in my life. And it was succulent, but it held it. You know how some, there were enough, I guess, membrane or whatever. There was enough structure to it that it didn't disintegrate when it was really hot. It had structure, but yet that velvety texture was really, really good.
Yeah, it's always good, countered with some nice crispy skin.
Yeah, and they decided on the mule foot because it's quite endangered. And so they're growing. This one, the woman, Amy, I think is her name, and I'm going to have them on sometime soon. She has the breeders. And they breed naturally, and they have their babies. And then when they're weaned, and they stay with the mom. The mom nurses them, and when it's time for them to be weaned, then they go to her partner who finishes them.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, there's a great campaign that the Patrick Martins from Heritage Foods USA ran, and, you know, perfectly worded, eat me to save me, you know, and you know, yeah. the only way that we're going to be able to actually save those heritage breeds if we eat them and we buy them and support the farmers that grow them. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, I know so many people who won't eat lamb because they're so cute. You know, they see them out on the hillside, you know, especially at this time of year. And it's like the only reason that they're there is because eventually someone eats them.
Yeah.
And if that were to stop, where would we have the resources to continue to raise them generation after generation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool.
So, back to the book. And I should tell you, I should reintroduce you. It is Sam Moganum. You had a co-author, Dabney Goff.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Dabney's awesome. She's, you know, worked at the market for, you know, about 5 years in various capacities. She started working in the deli and then the kitchen and then in the catering department. And then she left, moved to Connecticut to work at Fine Cooking Magazine. And then a year and a half later came back and ran our marketing department. And it was during that period of time that she and I started working on the book.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of convinced me that we needed to write the book. I convinced her to come back so we could write the book. And we did it, and now she's living in Honolulu.
What's she doing there?
She's working for Whole Foods.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, she just started working for the new Whole Foods that opened up a couple weeks ago.
Whereabouts
in Honolulu? I'm not that familiar with the town, but somewhere there.
You know, I think I have mixed feelings about Whole Foods. I feel like in Sonoma County, you don't really need a place like that. But there, man, is it a blessing in New Orleans?
Yeah.
My daughter lives about an hour and a half outside of New Orleans in Mississippi, and shopping can be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So we go into New Orleans and, you know, do a big shopping and go back to Hattiesburg, and we're good.
Yeah.
And I can see the same thing being true in Honolulu.
Yeah, I'm sure they need it.
Let's talk about cheese.
Sure.
Really popular these days.
and a lot of great producers in Sonoma.
No, okay, all over the Bay Area. I mean, yeah. There's just been this huge, you know,
resurgence.
Yeah, in the last, well, I thought it was going on a decade ago, and then even in the last 5 years, there's just been more and more and more.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see. Yeah.
So you have a cheese plate here. I want you to tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, it's got five cheeses on it, and it starts with, you know, some mild, soft cheeses and works its way up to more pungent and firmer cheeses. You know, one of the things I love about tasting through cheese with people is letting them experience various textures, various richness and types of milk. And, you know, the world of cheese is crazy, you know, and every cheese, you know, that comes from a cheesemaker is always different, you know, depending on what time of year.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating, you know. We've had, you know, just so much fun tasting people on cheese and letting them experience it,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And your customers are open to that.
Oh, yeah, they love it.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty cool.
Is there still that love for the old style of cheeses that were available when these artisan cheeses weren't around? Where are those two worlds sort of, you know, meshing?
Which two worlds?
The worlds of, you know, what do we call, not so much commodity cheese, but mm-hmm. sort of commodity mm-hmm. cheese, the mm-hmm. big blocks of, you know, cheddar and jack. We won't go to, we'll leave the world of Velveeta and such mm-hmm. behind, but then sort of the next level.
You know, I mean, people are clamoring for those cheeses.
They're,
oh yeah. I mean, it's exciting. I mean, they're excited about the cheeses that are produced locally, but they're also excited about those artisan cheeses that are produced in, you know, old world cultures, uh-huh. you know, like Italy and France and England, you know, because mm-hmm. they tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
And they are an important part of history and how culture survived. You know, I mean, you know, cheese was made as a means of preserving milk,
yeah.
and a means of sustaining and having food to eat during the winter when mm-hmm. you didn't have much else.
When there was not much refrigeration, when there was
right.
no refrigeration,
exactly.
milk was not really distributed.
Yeah.
Turned it into what? Butter and cheese.
That's right.
Fed the way back to the cow, yeah. back to the babies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you noticed with cheese in particular, but with anything in your market, the whole anti-fat movement was really strong. And I remember when Laura Chanel wrote her wonderful book on American cheese, she couldn't give cheese away. I think it was, she tells a story. I think she was in Bloomingdale's in New York offering tastes of these beautiful, beautiful cheeses. And people were just, maybe it was Macy's in New York. Anyway, people wouldn't even take the taste. Mm. They were terrified of a bite of cheese because it was so evil and bad for you. Where is that whole thing in expressing itself in markets at this point?
We don't see it.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Good news.
I mean, people going for the fat, man. You gotta love it. And,
uh-huh.
You know, it's flavorful, and really, if you're eating it in moderation, it's all good.
Yeah, you know, it's good for you.
You know,
it's where concentrated nutrients are.
Yeah, it's good.
So, well, that is really, really good.
As long as you're keeping
news.
Everything in balance.
Yeah, diversity.
That's right.
Diversity and moderation. Tell me about how you developed the recipes. I'm looking at this picture. Now I wish we were on television. So, roasted beet, pickled onions, and feta, which is, you know, a classic combination. But this picture is just so beautiful. You could just pick it up and lick it. So, was this a collaboration? Are these your recipes? Collaboration of different people in the store?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're either my recipes or recipes that were developed in the kitchen by our mm-hmm. chefs,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're all simple. You know,
that's, I was going to say they're very easy to reproduce at
home.
They're
ingredients you can get anywhere. You know, we were really conscious of creating recipes that we felt that people could actually execute, mm-hmm. and without too much of a time commitment and too much of a financial commitment. And you know, good food doesn't, you know, need a ton of money, and it doesn't need a ton of time. You can actually enjoy it, you know, as long as you're shopping smartly.
I so agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think the best food is good ingredients. Don't mess them up.
Yeah, like those beets. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, a couple bunches of beets. If you roasted, you peel them and then toss them with just a simple vinaigrette and a little cheese on top. And, you know, whether you put the cheese or not, it doesn't matter. But those beets alone are just amazing.
Yeah. Really good and really beautiful. Okay, we get towards the end of the book to the bakery section. Tell me about the baked goods at Byright. How much do you bake in house?
Yeah, so all the cookies, cakes and pies are all done in house. They're made at the creamery by my wife and her partner, Chris Hugerhide, and mm-hmm. so my wife's been a pastry chef in San Francisco for 20 years now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing. I can't believe that she's been baking that long. And she's got a great book coming out in a month.
Oh, what's
April,
the book?
April 17th. Uh-huh. So Sweet Cream and Sugar Cones. It's you know, an ice cream book.
Oh,
and all the inclusions and great flavorings that go along with making delicious ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
So she's really excited about that.
Is that all so 10 speed?
It is also 10 speed. You know, and that book's, you know, but it hasn't even been published yet. It's already outsold mine.
Really? Yeah. Advance orders?
Advance orders.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
That's really great. Congratulations to her.
It's a beautiful book. She's very proud of it.
Take it out. Has she gotten a copy yet?
Yeah, she got one advance copy.
One advance copy. That's when you're tempted to wrap it up in a little blanket, take it outside in a stroller.
Sleep with it under your pillow.
Yeah, it was somebody who writes books on music and culture who told me that. It's like, oh God, I thought I was the only idiot who felt that way. He said, no, you walk down the sidewalk like a proud papa. So I see you carry Acme bread.
We do.
The best bread in the world.
Acme's awesome, you know, but we also, you know, you have Della Fattoria up here, which I adore. I think they make amazing bread. And we also work with a great bakery in Oakland called Firebrand that's still mm-hmm. baking out of a wood-fired oven. And then there's a couple of great, like, you know, little upstart, you know, mm-hmm. bakers in San Francisco.
Yeah. Have you followed Craig Ponsford?
Yeah, he's
doing some amazing stuff down in Marin.
Well, who's he baking for now?
He's got his own place.
Ah, cool. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of time, but real quickly. Are you familiar with Community Grains?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Well, I almost brought you their polenta today.
I have a bag in my freezer.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were on, Craig was on with, I think it
Bob
was...
Bob Klein?
Bob.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Bob and Craig were on. They weren't on for very long because there was an accident on 101.
Oh, no.
They couldn't get here until about halfway through the show. But Craig has opened a little shop. He's working with Community Grains and then has opened. It's something...
In Marin?
In Marin, in San Rafael, a little place. And it's got an interesting name. It's like... Bake Shop and Experimental Center, or I mean, something along those lines. And he brought me a round loaf of walnut bread, which was like on the 18th, maybe 15th of December. And I took it with me when I flew to New Orleans on the 20th. And we used that bread up until like New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
It lasted so well and was so full of flavor.
Yeah,
it was just amazing.
I mean, that's the beauty of good bread. You know, it takes a slow fermentation, so it actually lasts for 4 or 5 days, you know, after it's baked.
So,
it's beautiful.
He's doing a lot of work with these with growers of grain and millers.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that now we're gaining an appreciation for wheat again, you know. I mean, it's like it's been, you know, gold medal for years and years and years. You know, it's about time that we appreciate, you know, wheat varieties that are actually nutritious and flavorful.
Yeah, there's some really interesting science being, or scientific aspects that are being explored with that as well.
Yeah.
Another topic for another time, but there's a lot of thought that maybe gluten intolerance has developed because
of how processed.
How processed everything is, and that it may actually diminish when you start using these other sort of whole, more naturally grown grains. So we're out of time.
Wow, that was quick.
If time flies here on Mouthful. The book is by is from 10 Speed Press. It is $32.50. It's a beautiful hardcover. Buy Right Markets, Eat Good Food, A Grocer's Guide to Shopping, Cooking, and Creating Community Through Food by Sam McGannum and Dabney Goff. Really a wonderful book, and I can't wait to come into your store. I will make a trip to San Francisco that, because I'm out of Ben Yule's. And on that note, coming up next is Outbeat Salon. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful when we have a return visit by Ann Fisher Silva, who will be talking about being healthy in a smart way. In the meantime, have a great week and feed yourself and your loved ones really well.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing, to the Lord let praises be, it's time for dinner, now let's go, we got some beans and some good cornbread, now listen to what the preacher says.